Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome, friends. It's the Movie Boom Podcast. Podcast. Enjoy the show. Zachy and Brian are talking about the movies. Movie Boom Podcast on the radio.
Welcome to Movie Film. This is episode 160, and it is the day before Thanksgiving. I'm here giving thanks that my partner Brian Hall is up bright and early, ready to talk some movies with me.
Zachy, you are just a natural at this.
Oh, well, thank you. But I think I forgot to say my name. I'm Zachy Hassan.
Ah, well, hey, well, I'm thankful that you brought that up because I'm happy to be here with you today.
Well, we got obviously one big new release to talk through, which both of us got to see an early screening of.
Yeah, it worked out perfectly because this is dropping the day it comes out.
Well, there we go. So we will be talking later in the episode about Creed, or as I call it, Rocky IV 2.
Yes, yeah, yeah. But, Creed, wait, Creed 2, Rocky 8, Rocky IV 2.
So that actually works, Rocky IV 2, which...
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of symmetry there, a lot of synchronicity. It's weird. But we're going to hold that conversation. Because we got other stuff to get through. I saw Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald. And now I need to take a nap after saying that title, because it is exhausting.
I'll be honest, it reminds me of when you were talking about the Avatar sequels, and you're like, Avatar, the Argle Bargle. but that, I say respectfully, it's just a joke. I'm not into the Harry Potter universe. That's on me.
Well, it's on me, too.
Makes complete sense.
I'm not... You know, I say this all the time. I'm like, I haven't seen them. And usually if I say that in my classes, my students do some variation of...
Yeah, isn't that funny? I mean, it's we talk about this sometimes where there are just these, you know, cultural phenomenons that we are half on the outside of.
Yes.
Like, we are aware of them. I could name the Harry Potter characters, but I'm just not in the middle of that phenomenon. So it's one of those things I sort of watch from afar. And this is one of them. Like, I don't know if I ever will see this movie, to be honest. You know.
Yeah, I would not have either. You know, I saw it for the simple reason that obviously I did have to write a review, but also my kids are Potterheads.
Yeah, well, and I was going to say, because I think, yeah, then there's like a certain age that I think, you know, came up with the books. I was in college when the books came out, and I read the first one out of curiosity because it, like I said, it was a phenomenon. And I liked it. I was like, oh, this is really easy to read. It was really fun. And then I don't know, for some reason I didn't keep going with it. But some people grew up, you know,
with
all of
them. Well, it's funny because I had this conversation online and some, I was like, I haven't read any of the books. And somebody was like, you haven't read any of the books? I'm like, well, you know, I mean, I wasn't really in the target audience when it came out, and it just kind of passed me by. It's like, no, it's for anybody at any age. And yeah. I'm like, all right, listen. I respect what you're saying. But the first Harry Potter is a kid's book. I mean, it just is.
Yes, it definitely, I think,
there's nothing wrong with that, but...
No, not at all.
Right?
Well, I mean, similarly, like when The Hunger Games was like a thing, you know, I don't think that was targeted at me either, but it was such a popular thing. I was like, well, what's this about? So I read the first book.
Yeah, so my kids are massive Harry Potter fans, and so my second was like, oh, you know, we got to go see it. My oldest one was camping this past weekend. Sorry, this is like the life and times of Zachy Hassan, I realize, as I'm going through my life. And
you
so,
know, I was going to ask because I know your son likes to camp, so I was like, oh, wow, that's fun. He went again.
He goes every month, this kid, you know.
Wow.
With his Boy Scout troop. This kid's a soldier, man. He went on a 10-mile hike.
Wow. With a pack and everything?
With a pack.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I get exhausted halfway through the phrase 10-mile hike.
No, me too. Yeah, yeah. That's amazing. Good for him.
So, yeah, he loves this stuff. And I'm like, well, I'm glad that you love it. And there you go. I'm like, I'm not going to do that unless there's a monster chasing me for 10 miles. I'm not going on a 10-mile hike. That's just those are Zachy's life rules.
Right.
But so I took my second, and I'm not gonna lie, I was dreading it.
Mm.
And it, I was just like, because I remember watching the first Fantastic Beasts, 2 years ago, and just not knowing what the hell was going on, and like mm-hmm. just being tired, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was like. It was like you got to scratch it off the list. It's like, all right, let me just get this out of the way. That was my thing. You know, I even told my wife, I'm like, oh, all right, well, I just got to do it. I got a show to do. I got a review to write. I suppose I should do something for the boy. And we went. And so this is, for those of you who don't know, this is the second in the prequel saga, five movie Fantastic Beasts saga set in the Wizarding World. And it does for Harry Potter what The Hobbit did for Lord of the Rings, and what Star Wars episodes 1 through 3 did for Star Wars episodes 4 through 6. And that's either good or bad. That what I just said is either horrifying or intriguing. And I mean, honestly, these movies are like a Rorschach test, depending on your degree of fandom. I said before, I'm just not a huge fan of the movie. I'm not a fan. I don't know enough because I haven't seen the movies.
Right.
So for me, I walked out of Fantastic Beasts 2 being like, huh, that was pretty good.
Oh, nice.
But I'm apparently in the extreme minority because certainly...
really?
Well, just anecdotally, because I don't look at Rotten Tomatoes until after I write my review. Rotten Tomatoes, I mean, this movie's getting demolished.
See, I think that's funny because as you have just said that you're not really versed in all this, and then you gave it a shot, and you're like, oh, that was kind of fun. And then everyone's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so you Harry liked Potter the wrong fans. One.
Well, I know, exactly. Harry Potter fans, just sort of me, peering into the cesspool that is Twitter, are quite up in arms because... J.K. Rowling, who wrote the script for this, has taken apparently several liberties with the timeline of the Wizarding World and the sort of the canonical things that are depicted a certain way. And this is stuff I know nothing about.
Mm-hmm.
Based on everything that's going on, I think George Lucas just kind of took one look and was like, funny how that happens, huh?
Yeah, I was just going to say, I was trying to come up with some sort of version of like you either, you know, die the hero or live long enough to become George Lucas.
Yeah, that's right. Yours is better. But essentially that's it. So the plot here, so this, it's set in 1927, and Brian, the mm-hmm. evil wizard Grindelwald, that name is just like, my mouth is like getting a workout every time I'm saying that, who is played by Johnny Depp, has escaped. Now, Grindelwald is the he's a bad dude because he's a pureblood, Brian. He's a pureblood.
A pureblood what?
A pureblood wizard?
Okay.
Question mark?
I didn't know if that meant, muggle or wizard.
Brian, I know what you I'm are talking such about. A non-madge. Or a no-madge or whatever.
Ah, damn it. Now I don't know what you're talking about now.
So a muggle is the European word for a person who is a normal human. But in America, we say no madge.
Okay.
If you're Al Bundy, you say no ma'am.
Right.
Right. So anyway, Grindelwald is up to some business, as he's, wont to do on occasion. Mm-hmm. And our man, Newt Scamander, played by Eddie Redmayne,
mm-hmm.
is trying to stop him, and
Jupiter Ascending fame.
That's right. Will his star ever stop rising?
Yeah,
I think he won an Oscar and a Razzie in the same year.
Right,
I'm pretty sure. He talked about Jupiter Ascending, by the way. Did you see this?
No.
Yeah, I think he was out doing the rounds for Fantastic Beasts, and they asked him about Jupiter Ascending. He's like, well, you know, like what were you doing in that movie? Because if you haven't seen the movie, folks, he's doing this weird, like, raspy thing, and it sounds ridiculous. And he's like, well, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time.
that movie is just like a big ball of crazy, and I don't know, it is what it is.
It is what it is. There you go. Anyway. Back to Fantastic Beasts, Brian.
We've
got a lot to get through here.
Yeah, we got so much.
So a bunch of stuff happens, and Dumbledore shows up. Professor Dumbledore, you know him, played by Richard Harris in the previous Harry Potter movies.
I always knew he'd come back knocking at my Dumbledore.
So he was played by Richard Harris / Michael Gambon, because Richard Harris died halfway through the series. But anyway, he is the headmaster of Hogwarts. So we go back to Hogwarts and a little bit of fan service, and there we see young Dumbledore, Youngledore, played by... They should call him that, right? Hashtag Youngledore. Played by Jude Law.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, great cast, and he's great.
No, I mean you. That was really...
Youngledore. Why, thank you. Here's the thing. This is important. Dumbledore and Grindelwald were lovers back in the day.
Okay.
The movie alludes to it in a way that some people are saying is not... pronounced enough. I mean, to me, it seemed clear as day,
mm-hmm.
right? Or as clear as you're going to get in a movie like this.
Sure.
But they took like an oath, like a blood oath, that they can't act against each other.
Okay.
All right. So you've got the factions in the wizarding world. You've got Grindelwald, who wants to basically convince all of the magically inclined people to take over the world, whereas the Ministry of Wizarding, or Wizardry, or Magic, whatever the hell it's called, the thing mm-hmm. with the magic, they're like, no, we need to maintain peace. So it's like you've got these two factions, but what's interesting to me is that neither can act directly against the other. Dumbledore can't act against Grindelwald. Grindelwald can't act against Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. Because they took a blood oath. And so that's where Newt Scamander comes in. And then you have this character played by Ezra Miller called Credence, who is an important character that I'm not going to reveal. And there's something revealed about his backstory that I was like, oh, that's interesting. But mm-hmm. a lot of people are very upset because it is a potentially continuity smashing type of thing.
I see.
And that's all you're going to get from me, Copper.
Well, is it basically like X-Men with wizards?
Kind of is, yeah.
They sound like Magneto and Professor X.
There is a little bit of that, yeah. The movie, because when the first movie ended, the first Fantastic Beasts, I was like my shoulders slumped, and I was like, oh, four more. Like, I mean, it's like a threat, you know?
Right.
And this one ended, and I'm like, oh, well, let's see what happens next, you know?
Yeah,
I'm not like I don't have like an hourglass turned over counting every grain of sand until that movie comes out, you know. But when it comes out, I'll probably watch it, and I'll have a little bit more anticipation for it than I did before. But again, I've like gone through a portal into Bizarro World, because a lot of people are like, this movie broke the Potter franchise, and you know, it's performing at a slightly lesser level than the first one, which I would imagine that's not going to be a problem because it'll have legs, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm.
But very interesting. It's been instructive, because again, this is not a fandom that I look down on. It's just not a fandom I'm aware of.
Yeah, ditto. Yeah, it's kind of interesting too, because you know, I say that thing about J.K. Rowling, but you know, she wrote that play, right, The Cursed Child.
Yeah, which a lot of people didn't like that either.
Oh, really? Oh, I was going to say, I thought it was the opposite. I thought I had heard that a lot of people really liked it.
A lot of people are like, oh, it's just a glorified fanfic. And, you know, I mean, it's...
Oh, interesting.
You know, look, whether you're Gene Roddenberry or George Lucas or J.K. Rowling, it's the same shit, right? You create a thing that fans feel more entitled to than you.
Yes. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And that's another thing, too. I mean, when Harry Potter had an ending... And so there is something about a completeness of a thing that you like. You're like, oh, they did it. So like anything added gets extra scrutiny, which I mean, I say as a Star Wars fan, you know. So I understand. It's obviously
down this road, you and I.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So you just, I don't know. You want everyone to like the thing they want to like.
I mean, this is what I was doing because I was with my second kid, and he's read all the books. So I would be like, hey, is that so and so? And he'd be like, yeah, you know, hey, is that the guy? Oh, okay. You know, I mean, that's just where I'm at now with this, you know?
It's like role reversal. And he's like, Dad, you're going to find out if you pay attention.
Yeah, just why don't you shut up, right? You know? So I think you know, the Wizarding World is now not merely the books, it is also the films, it mm-hmm. is also the theme park, and people plug into, it's just like Star Wars, man. People plug in their own way.
Yeah.
And so, in essence, you have people saying, well, my interpretation is just as valid as J.K. Rowling's, which is, by the way, empirically false. That's not true. But, you know, we live in the age of entitled fandoms.
Right.
And I think that's where we're at. Now, there's going to be three more of these. I think that's the other thing, too, to be honest. There is sort of a presumptuousness of like, oh, we're making five of these, like announcing that already.
Which is funny. I was thinking about that. I forgot now that you bring that up, because that's the same thing with Avatar. Like, it used to be trilogies.
I know.
And now people are like, no, no.
I know. We have to up the game. I mean, I think like using Star Wars as a parallel, right? There is all this upset over The Last Jedi, which has not really subsided, right? But I think most of those people, the cranky pants people who are complaining, and there are legitimate complaints. I'm not including you among the cranky pants label, just to be clear. But even the people who are complaining are going to be like, well, there's just one more. Of course, we're going to watch that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, talk is cheap because you're going to be there because it's just one more anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think there's a utility to having a trilogy that gets lost a little bit when you sort of promise in advance this miniseries of movies.
Yeah. It's just there's three acts to a story, right? I mean, there's just sort of this inherent thing that just feels right. And I wonder, I don't know. I'd actually be curious with Harry Potter fans, because there's eight movies, right? I think seven stories, but they split the last one in two. And I wonder if there's... You know, if I want to revisit Star Wars, I could do that over three nights, right?
But with Potter, it at least makes sense, right? Because each story is set 1 year apart. So essentially, we're tracking Harry from boyhood to adulthood.
Yeah. I mean, the stories should be whatever they want to be. But I just wonder if there's like a... And not that your stories should be based on, you know, revisit viewing habits. But just I wonder if there's like a... easy way for one of them to sort of get lost in the mix, you know, you don't revisit all of them because it's just too much work or.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, so.
Yeah.
So I personally enjoyed Fantastic Beasts 2, but I would say if you are a diehard fan, maybe be prepared to let go of some of the canon that you've sort of grown attached to. I don't know.
Interesting.
I mean, my perspective, take my perspective into account as being the guy who's not super versed with all of it.
Yeah.
What about you? Have you caught anything?
No, well, not really. Mostly because we did our Rocky IV commentary this past weekend, and I was getting all cut up on Rocky.
Yes.
Which so I'll get. Watching. Yeah, I talked. Wait, what?
So you have been watching movies. You've been watching.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, I've seen. Sure. Yeah, I saw Rocky 1 through 4. I will keep going. I'm glad I got at least up to 4 in time to see Creed 2, because I thought it enhanced the experience, we'll get into in a bit.
Yeah, I can't wait to discuss that. Well, Brian, you did see the Rocky movies, and you did mention some of your reactions to them in our Rocky 4 commentary track, which, by the way, folks, please check that out. It was a fun record for us. I think it would be a fun listen for you guys, I hope. But Jeremy Lloyd, our listener, had a comment about that, and I think this is important. I think he brought up something that's really it's dereliction of duty on our part. He says, listening to this episode and hearing Brian had watched Rocky 3 for the first time prior to this, I couldn't help but wonder, how did Rocky's wrestling match with Hulk Hogan not get brought up? That is true.
Yeah. It was interesting watching them all back to back, right? Like, I mentioned this during the commentary, but like Rocky 1 and 2 feel of a piece, right? That sort of 70s down to earth sort of underdog story. And two, you know, 1 and 2 feels like the natural progression of that. Like, what happens when the underdog suddenly has everything? And then 3 was an interesting transition, I thought, into what the movies became. With 4, you know, a little more almost like fantasy.
Yes. You
know, in the 80s and 80s style. And all of a sudden, Rocky is rich. And I thought the stakes, they didn't hit me as much as the other ones. Like, you know, he's saying like, I don't know, I got to do this fight for my honor, as he's wearing like a fur coat and like, you know, aviator glasses. So there was something that was just very different about that movie to begin with, going straight from 2. And also, I have to admit out loud, and I did say this I commented this to him online, but I was very tired when I watched Rocky 3, and I had to split it up over 2 nights because I fell asleep. And so I think the Hulk Hogan moment, I probably forgot about it because it sort of felt like a fever dream.
That's really funny.
And then he reminded
me
that
when you watch the movie too, even if you're fully cognizant, it still feels like a fever dream.
Yeah. He reminded me that it happened. But it's funny too. Maybe because 80s or whatever, and I was there, I was like, yeah, if I could see that happening. Like, I don't know, some crazy WrestleMania thing, and they bring in a boxer and Hulk Hogan. Although it's not played for, like, it's some sort of entertainment. He actually seems like he truly wants to kill Rocky.
Yeah, which is, I mean, it's, and he plays, by the way, he plays Thunderlips.
Yes.
The Mountain of Molten Lust. Yeah. The Ultimate Man versus the Ultimate Meatball.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And Hulk Hogan proved, even back then in 1982, that he was not a very good actor, Hulk Hogan. I could never have believed that.
Zachy, I don't want to bring up No Holds Barred.
That movie, dude, No Holds Barred makes Rocky IV look like the Magnificent Ambersons.
Magnificent Ambersons. Yeah. No Holds Barred.
And remember Suburban Commando?
Yes, with Christopher Lloyd.
With Christopher Lloyd, yeah. How weird. There's this weird window where, I mean, because No Holds Barred came out summer of 89. So that was the summer of Batman.
Wow.
So I have very clear of affiliations in my head with that. And I remember watching it for the first time and just, you know, I was 10. And I was just like, oh, okay, this is, like, you don't question the inherent ridiculousness of the movie.
No.
But it is truly one of the great bad movies.
I'd be curious to see it again, because I think I only remember it from sleepovers,
where
it was awesome.
Well, it's just, it's funny, because it's like Rocky IV, where you watch it, and objectively, you're like, guys, this is a boxing match. Like, just settle down here. You know, this is not the end of the world, you know?
Right.
It's like No Holds Barred exists in a world. And it's a story, by the way. It's like written by Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon. Like, you know?
Oh, really? Vince McMahon wrote that?
Yeah, it's like produced by WWF.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And you know, wrestling is like the most important TV program. Like, networks are fighting over who gets Hulk Hogan, whose name is Rip. By the way,
yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
like, and oh God, what's that guy's name?
Tiny
Lister as Zeus.
Lister, yes, I remember that. And they're like, "What's your name?" He's like,
Zeus. He's like the Groot of 1989.
Yes,
because that's all he says.
Yeah,
but Kurt Fuller is like the most evil TV executive of all time.
Yeah, the role he was born to play.
And it's just funny because there's a scene where, basically, like, Kurt Fuller's goons are like driving.
Dude, I just filled my mouth with coffee. I had to swallow really fast because I know where this is going.
Okay, I think you know that.
Yeah.
Kurt Fuller's goons are like driving Hulk Hogan somewhere he doesn't want to go, and he's like, "Hey guys, where are we going?" Right. That's exactly what it sounds like. And he realizes they're taking him somewhere, so he like hurls himself at like the door.
Mm-hmm.
Inside this limousine, and through the sheer force of his, like, you know, the force of hitting the door, he like changes the course of the car.
Actually, I don't remember that.
Yeah, and so he gets him to stop, and then he just starts beating the hell out of the people that are there, and then the driver, he like lifts him up, and the guy, I'm not joking, he shits his pants.
Yeah.
You do remember this, right?
I do, yes.
And he's like, "What's that smell?" Yeah. And the guy's like, "Dookie."
Can't you picture Hulk and Vince McMahon at the typewriter in their hotel? Just like, "We did it!"
Now, Brian, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I watched No Holds Barred one time in 1989.
Mm-hmm.
But what I just described to you is as clear and vivid in my mind as the birth of my first child. So say what you want about that movie.
It made an impression.
Yeah.
It was playing in my head as you were talking about it. I didn't know it was in there.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and Joan Severance was in this movie, actually. Oh, my God. I had such a crush on her when I was a kid.
Oh, man. Anyway.
Anywho, yeah.
I had no idea we'd spend like 4 minutes on that.
Yeah, so I don't know how we ended up there, actually. Yeah, oh, okay, so Rocky III. Okay, so anyway, there you go. There you go, Jeremy. You're welcome.
Yeah, Yeah. But I, you know, in conclusion too about the my Rocky marathon, man, that was fun. I really enjoyed that. And I was like really just re-fell in love with the Rocky character, and it really did pay off watching, you know, Creed 2. It was, I brought it all with me, and I think that helped my experience.
Well,
or enhanced. It didn't need any help.
And you know, you came for the Rocky 3 remembrance. You stay for the bonus no holds barred remembrance.
Yep.
You know, we're all purpose here. Let's take a little break, and then we'll come back and talk some headlines.
Cool.
And we're back, and just to start things off, we have a couple of unfortunate passings that are, I mean, we can't not mention them. Obviously, the big one is that Stan Lee has passed away.
Yep. I can't believe we haven't recorded since then.
Yeah, well, it was only, you know, like a week ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, almost like there's been so much talk about it that it feels like it was longer.
Yeah.
And you know, obviously this is one of those ones where if we're honest, we all knew it was coming probably sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I mean, he was 95 years old.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as he was in his 80s, it's one of those things where you're like, well, this is something we're going to be dealing with soon, you know.
Right.
But I don't know about you, but certainly for me, as soon as I, you know, I got multiple text messages, my phone was just blowing up, and it was like a punch to the stomach.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those things too, though, where, I mean, you know, yes, we were saying like you get to a certain age and you know it's coming, it's approaching, but he was still showing up in movies and he still seemed pretty sprightly, at least in front of the cameras and... so, you know, he's still very vibrant and very much a part of the thing that the world is enjoying right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It feels like that affects it even more because you're like, oh, but he was just with us. We just
saw him in Ant-Man and the Wasp. We just saw him in Venom.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so if you know, for a deeper reflection on Stan Lee's impact, I had the chance to talk to my friend Glenn Greenberg over at the Nostalgia Theater Show, which I hope you'll check out. Go to the Nostalgia Theater podcast and listen to it for about an hour. We reflected on Stan Lee's legacy, but also the fact that Glenn knew him, having worked at Marvel Comics, and I think that made for some really interesting conversation. But you know, I think the ultimate measure of Stan Lee's achievement is that he fundamentally changed the way we tell stories.
Right.
And the impact of his work is going to be felt forever.
Yeah. And it's I really think it's nice that he was able to see where it all led.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously he's had decades and decades worth of his work being read and enjoyed, but I mean, that he got to see the Marvel Cinematic Universe truly become one of the monsters of entertainment. That's so satisfying.
I mean, in the last year of his life, Avengers, Infinity War, and Black Panther came out and became some of the most successful movies ever made.
Yeah.
That's not a bad thing. And by the way, you know, it goes to the long game sometimes that you have to play when you're a creative person, you know? I mean, I was talking about this in my media class where I was like, you know, ultimately, what did Stan Lee do? He was like, you know what? I'm sick of the way people have been doing superhero comics. Like, I'm sick of doing this. If I'm going to go out, I want to go out under my own steam. So he wrote the Fantastic Four, and he had the gall to say, hey, let's break the rules. Let's make them like real people. Let's make them have real problems. And wouldn't you know it, like 50 plus years later, you know, that change was such a paradigm shift that we can't think of it being any other way.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else changed in reaction to Marvel.
Yeah.
DC Comics became more like Marvel.
And, yeah.
You know, and all from being willing to just be like, you know what, let's burn it down and start over.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I don't know.
It is amazing.
You know. I think that Spider-Man if nothing else, Spider-Man. If you were to take everything else away from Stanley and just say Spider-Man, he would still be one of the most important people in comic book history.
Yeah,
I think that character is that important. But then when you add in the breadth of everything else that he you know, populating that universe with so many different characters and giving each of them, you know, foibles and failings and allowing the universe to grow and evolve. And this is all stuff that we take for granted. And I mean, the Marvel Cinematic Universe now is just doing what the comics did 50 years ago.
Hmm.
You know, so the movies just took a while to get there.
Sure. Yeah. Right.
You know, another death, and this is no less of a giant, is William Goldman.
Yeah, I was a little surprised when I saw this headline. I was like, "Oh wow!" And then I feel like I didn't hear anything else about it.
Kind of weird, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he wrote All the President's Men, Marathon Man, Butch Cassidy, The Princess Bride.
The Princess Bride. Yeah.
The book and the movie.
Yep.
And he's obviously the author of defining screenwriting books.
Yep. Yep, and he also was a script doctor on so many things. I mean, it was like Twins, A Few Good Men, you know, Decent Proposal. And then Good Will Hunting is one of the things that there was this rumor that he secretly wrote Good Will Hunting. And Matt Damon, I heard him recently in some interview talking about that. People still asking him about that. And this was before Goldman had passed. But he said that Goldman reached out about that to them and said, "I wish I had written Good Will Hunting." And they took that as the ultimate compliment.
Well, I would think just being accused of having Goldman ghostwrite your script is itself, right?
Yeah, that's a good point.
William Goldman wrote it. You're like, hey, all right. I guess nice. I did okay. You know?
Yeah.
You know, if somebody comes up to you and they're like, come on, did you have Aaron Sorkin look at this? Come on.
right.
I didn't, but hey.
Sure.
Absolutely, another giant, and you know, certainly for me, when I was going to film school, I just devoured his various screenwriting books. One of them, I'm forgetting the title. I think it's what was sort of like the big screenwriting book that he's known for. You know what I'm talking about? Adventures in the Screen Trade. That's like the main one.
Okay. I'm not sure.
But he did like several books, right? So the big one was Adventures in the Screen Trade, which is just his, I mean, Adventures in the Screen Trade is right there. But he also did a book called Which Lie Did I Tell, which is a sequel to that. And then he did four screenplays with essays.
Okay.
So Marathon Man, Butch Cassidy, Princess Bride, Oh Misery also.
Oh, wow.
And just sort of unpacking them. And, I mean, I found it incredibly useful just in terms of story structure and things like that. That I'm not a screenwriter, but I am a film critic, and I've absolutely internalized the stuff that William Goldman put out there in terms of constructing story and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just a giant, you know?
Yep.
So that is an unfortunate loss. So both William Goldman and Stan Lee, they will be missed, but... Moving on, Brian.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of cinematic universes,
yes.
I think we're about due for a new one here. Actually, why don't you fill me in on this?
So this is something I came across, and I thought this was interesting. It looks like General Mills, you know, the food company, has set up a website. It is workwiththemonsters.com, and this is an open solicitation for people to pitch ideas for a serial monsters cinematic universe. So I'm talking Booberry. I'm talking Count Chocula. I'm talking Frankenberry. They want to come up with a
and
series
fruity
of films.
Yummy Mummy.
And I'm looking at the page right now, and it's this picture says, "Hello, Hollywood." And it's got Frankenberry posed seductively next to it. And they're just saying, "We want to work with you." And
this is the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, and you can submit your pitches and talk about your angles and your ideas of what you think you could do with these characters. And I it'd be really easy to crap on this. At the same time, I don't know, man. I've seen crazier things work.
watch this take off, and Universal be like, "Seriously, guys?"
Yes, right. Yeah, as they're taking their Dark Universe sign off the wall.
That's right.
Yeah.
The serial monster shared universe is something that General Mills is trying to do. Well, you know what? God bless him. Because
I honestly, that is my sincere reaction to that. I'm like, all right, hey,
fortune
let's see.
Favors the foolish.
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. I mean, to me, I'm always amazed that those serials like still exist.
I mean, yeah, I didn't even think about it. Yeah, that stuff's been around a long time.
It really. I mean, you know, we've been around long enough now. You and I, Brian, we've seen a lot of serials come and go.
Mr. T cereal. E.T. cereal. E.T. Remember cereal. Batman cereal back in 89?
I remember Batman cereal. It tasted like wet cardboard.
Yeah, I think all of it did. It was probably like all the same stuff. And then whatever movie was out that summer, they changed the box.
Well, because there was a company called Ralston that put out a lot of these licensed cereals. And they're also like a pet food company.
No, are you serious?
Yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, it was basically... I've actually given us this some thought, Brian. See, because you look at your licensed cereals, right? And you say, you know, what is the difference between like your Batman cereal and your Spider-Man cereal and your Ninja Turtle cereal, stuff that just comes and goes, versus like the Pebbles cereals?
Yeah,
because those are licensed.
Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah. That's a good right? point.
But you go down the cereal aisle, you know, like as sure as night will turn into day. You will see Tony the Tiger, and you will see Fred Flintstone. That's not going to go away. What's the difference? And the difference, Brian, is that the Pebbles cereals are, like, distinctive and unique in themselves. There's no other cereal that tastes like Fruity Pebbles or Cocoa Pebbles.
Right.
Whereas your Batman cereal, it's just like Captain Crunch in bat shapes.
Yes.
Or even more lazy.
The E.T. cereal was just E's and T's, the letters.
Yeah. So it's like alphabets minus most of the letters.
Yes, yes.
Right? Or even lazier still is when they just have a bunch of random shapes in marshmallow form.
Right.
That's some bullshit right there.
Well, actually, speaking of cereals, did you see this? They had the Sour Patch Kids cereal coming out.
I heard about that. That I don't know. That sounds awful to me.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine that taste mixed with milk?
It sounds horrifying. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll follow up on this. We'll follow up on this.
I mean, I'll tell you, for me, whenever a cereal that you love goes out of production, it's like a little piece of me dies. Right. You know, because the first time I realized that was a thing. There used to be, speaking of Pebbles, I didn't realize we were planning to go down this road. There was a cereal called Cinna Crunch Pebbles.
Wow, that sounds delicious. I don't remember it, though.
It was like God's cereal. Like, I'd like to believe up there in heaven, when God is hankering for some breakfast, he eats Cinna Crunch Pebbles.
Right.
And there's an unlimited supply. So I loved this, and then wouldn't you know, they stopped making it. And you know, it was like finding out Santa doesn't exist when you realize, oh, the cereals you like aren't always going to be around.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
It's like finding out Grandpa has died. It's very disappointing. So nowadays, I'm like, if I find out, like, there's a cereal I like and I find out that it's you know, not going to be in production anymore, I just hoard as many boxes of it as I can.
Well, it probably will last.
Yeah, that's the nice thing, you know.
Yeah, I think also like the trick is like a key song or like campaign. Like, I remember the whole Barney trying to steal the Fruity Pebbles from Fred thing.
Barney, my pebbles.
Yeah, I'm not making this up. I literally, when I'm getting ready in the morning and I'm getting out of the shower or brushing my teeth or something, I, no joke to this day, still go, the bedrock, orange, yellow, purple, lemon, red, but to get the fruity taste, I gotta trick Fred. It's still up there.
That's impressive.
No, thank you.
Well, there we go. So we've got our serial monster cinematic universe to look forward to, or not look forward to. I mean, odds are it never happens, but I'm kind of secretly hoping it does.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and this portion of the Movie Film Podcast has been brought to you by General Mills. General Mills.
General Mills. You know, most of their cereals will never go away.
Right.
Moving on, this is a very, very important headline, Brian, and given our mutual interests, I felt that it was, we would be remiss if not to bring it up, and this is that The Saint is about to be remade again.
Does this feel like is serendipity the right word? Like,
kinda.
Or did we conjure this by saying it three times in a mirror?
I looked in the mirror and I was like, and then I got a push notification on my phone. People are going to be listening and be like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about.
I know, but it's so perfect. Like what you just said. No, your impersonation of Val Kilmer and the original Saint.
So, okay. So if you've heard this, folks, already, just bear with us. If you have not heard this already, so the Saint is it's a book series that was previously made into a TV series starring Roger Moore. And then in 1997, they made a feature film directed by Philip Noyce and starring Val Kilmer as the master of disguise, Simon Templar. And the trailer for this film is itself a work of art, which
yes.
Go to YouTube and look it up. And the trailer is like, you know, a trailer guy narrating, he has many faces, but no one knows what he looks like. Or is it some bullshit like that? And yeah. And so you see Val Kilmer. You're like, there's Val Kilmer as Simon Templar. And there's Val Kilmer still, but now wearing a weird mustache. And there's still Val Kilmer, but now he has long hair. And there's Val Kilmer with like a bald cap and stringy hair. And like teeth. And so as you watch it, you're like, well, those are terrible disguises.
Yes.
And so during the course of this thing, you see him as all these different characters. And there's one time where he's like, you know, scientist, like Dr. Humbert Fumberdinkle, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, because he's got these false teeth and he looks ridiculous.
Yeah. But he's supposed to be like disappearing. Like, almost like, you know, Mission Impossible mask, like another human being.
Yes.
But it's clearly Val Kilmer and these bad Halloween, you know, prosthetics just like, I'm a scientist now.
I think what also hurts that premise is that Val Kilmer is himself. I mean, Val Kilmer is a handsome man, but he also has a very distinctive face.
Yes. It's very hard to, yes. Certain actors. I actually remember in the first Mission Impossible movie, in the second one moving forward, anytime they put on a mask, it was a different actor.
Yes.
But in the first movie, they actually tried to disguise Tom Cruise under a mask.
That's right.
Yeah. And you're like, well, I mean, you know.
Yeah. Like right in the opening, in the teaser.
Yes. Yeah. It's like this old man. And I mean, if you didn't know who he was, you probably would fall for it. But us in a Tom Cruise movie that we're sitting to watch, I mean, we know it's Tom Cruise under a mask. But even that was better than what was happening in The Saint.
Yes. So anyway, long story short, that franchise never materialized, although they've tried a couple times since then. But now they may have found the missing ingredient to making The Saint take off. And that missing ingredient is Chris Pratt.
Look, I like Chris Pratt. We like Chris Pratt. But he feels like another actor that might have a difficult time disappearing.
I totally agree.
Yeah, I actually, if they made that movie that we're talking about, and it's like a guy who can't disappear very well, like, and that's kind of the thing, that would be hilarious.
Yes. Well, here's my thing. If you can't put him in a bald cap and some stringy hair and have him be like, ho, then I'm just like, don't even bother doing it.
Then it ain't The Saint.
It ain't The Saint. It ain't
The Saint.
That'll
be hashtag ain't The Saint.
Ain't The Saint. That should be the movie.
Yeah.
Ain't The Saint.
Ain't
and it's
the
about
saint.
Exactly what you're saying. This guy who thinks he's this great master of disguise, but he's terrible.
Yes. Yes.
Dude, now I want that movie to be made with Chris Pratt.
Yes.
Because I would watch that.
Me too.
All right. So this is going to be produced by Lorenzo Di Bonaventura, he of the Transformers franchise. And, as Slash Film says, cue the hiring of Paramount's go-to guy, Akiva Goldman, in 3, 2, 1. This does seem like a made-to-order Goldman movie.
Yeah, it does.
Not William Goldman, Akiva Goldman.
Yeah.
The wrong Goldman. Sorry, Akiva. I was like, oh, that sounds kind of mean, actually.
Right.
He's like, hey, they said, oh, that's not nice.
And the kids in the back seat as they're like heading to wherever they're going for Thanksgiving are like, what'd that say, Dad? He's like, nothing, kids.
Click.
And he turns it down.
Well, you know what? You write Batman and Robin, you pay the price.
Right.
I'm hearing some music, so I think it's time for Star Wars news.
Yeah, and it's interesting because this week's Star Wars news has a lot to do not necessarily with the films themselves, but with Galaxy's Edge, which is the new Star Wars wing of Disneyland that's going to be opening, I think, next year.
Is not now you live in the vicinity thereof?
Yeah, about an hour, maybe less.
Have you been near there? Have you seen all the construction at work?
No, I don't pass it enough, but I have seen people post pictures on Facebook. You know, they'll be on top of some sort of tall ride or whatever, and they'll be like, "Hey, look, I can see what's going on over there."
So how big is Star Wars Land going to be?
I don't know, actually. I'm not so sure about that, but I am really impressed with what I'm reading. I mean, it sounds like the things that they are coming up with are just pushing theme park rides to the next level. I mean, I think we mentioned before that they're going to do this Millennium Falcon ride, and it truly, it's not like a ride where you hop on and then the seats just shake and take you on the same pat adventure every time.
Yeah.
Like, this is something where you will control the story, and based on what you do, the endings will be different. The outcomes will be different.
I guess they want it to be so immersive that at the end of the ride, the guy playing Kylo Ren will stab you in the chest and you die. That's actually how it
is. Yeah. That's one of the rides.
They want you to experience fully the life and death of Han Solo.
Yes. That would be the life and death of Han Solo.
There's just a pile of bodies like next to a catwalk that has to be cleared off every night. It's just... You pays your price. That's what happens.
Well, speaking of that, actually, some people noticed that there was a patent that was now online that Disney had filed for a new toy lightsaber that apparently is, you know, the most, I mean, I can't even say these words, like realistic. That's not, that just doesn't make sense.
How realistic do we want our lightsaber?
But, well, it's like they keep pushing what they can do with the lightsaber toy, and apparently this is one that will expand and retract. You know, I mean, those exist now where you have, like, the segments, but apparently this is one that will also have, like, LED lighting inside. And so in my mind, I imagine, you know, those really nice expensive ones that you can buy where they actually, they're permanently expanded, obviously.
Yes.
But they light up and they're, like, sensitive and have, like, the glow that matches what you see in the movie. And it sounds like now you'll have the ability to expand and retract those. It looks very complicated as I look at the... mechanics of it, but it sounds awesome, and I'll probably buy one.
I mean, let's be honest. Everything that we've just spent the last several minutes talking about, that's the real reason that Disney paid the $4 billion to buy Lucasfilm.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, think about this. Like, the shirts, the toys, the, you know. I mean, look, yeah, like, talking about fandom, I mean, I don't need this thing, but I'm almost guaranteed. And that's the thing. You get off a ride and you're like on the high of whatever awesome ride you came off of. And then they put you, you know, exit through the gift shop. And then I see this lightsaber thing. Like, yeah, I'll probably get swept up. So it's pretty brilliant. They're going to make a killing.
Yeah.
Off of this. But I mean, they're, you know, going all out. It's not like they're skimping, obviously, with the rides and everything. But also they had John Williams compose new music for this land. So...
And that music will be heard forever.
Forever. Wow. I wonder how much money he's going to make off of that just alone.
Yeah. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, I think that, too, is kind of brilliant that, you know, John Williams has said that he's basically retiring from Star Wars after episode 9.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's smart of Disney to be like, well, let's sort of get what we can from him while he's ready and willing.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, yeah, you got to imagine this is a theme you're going to be hearing, you know, you're standing in line for 4 hours. You see, that's actually the first thing that comes to mind when I think of this park, is not how exciting it will be, but just, oh, man, that sounds like a really, really long day.
Yeah, I'm notoriously line averse.
Yeah.
So, basically, the totality of Disneyland is a no-go for me, because I'm like, no, there are lines there.
It can be like that. I mean, if you choose your day that you visit wisely, it doesn't have to be too terrible. And you can also, you know, get those sort of fast pass things, which you have to coordinate there because, have you been? Have you been?
I have never been.
Oh, dude. I just thought, dude, come on down. We'll go. And then I thought, oh, wait, you have kids. You should take your kids.
Yeah. Well, that's kind of the
I'd
thing.
Like steal you from your family so we could go to Disneyland.
Dad, where are you going? Going to Disneyland. See you in 3 days.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry, no kids.
I think I told you this. A couple of years ago, my family and I, we were in SoCal. And so we went to Downtown Disney,
mm-hmm.
which is like the street leading up to the park, and you have stores and everything else, and it's all Disney-centric, and then you walk right up to the gate. And so we were like, all right, well, let's go to Downtown Disney. We went there, we went to the shops, we had some lunch, and then, you know, you walk right up to the gate, and you can see people walking in. The boys are like, oh, can we go? I'm like, no. No, we can't. And so we turned around, and we, you know, went back to our hotel. And so my kid, my oldest kid at the time, he was probably, you know, 6 or 7. He wrote in his, like, what I did over Christmas break, like, thing for school. We went to Downtown Disney, and we went right up to the gates. We watched everybody go in the park, and then we went home. Like, I'm like, ah, all right.
That is pretty funny. Actually, I just thought of an idea for a movie, like, with, you know, sorry, son, we can't go. And then it's like, you know, little Humza wanted to go to Disneyland. And then, like, while everyone's sleeping in the hotel room, you know, he, like, gets up in the middle of the night, and for somehow, like, the gate opens for him, and he gets to, like, have his own little Disneyland adventure.
See, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. We got to make that happen.
Okay. But we'll cast someone else. Humza won't play himself. We can't really let him in the park.
Yeah, that's we got to keep that tradition alive. Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously, Star Wars Episode 9 is a coming, and we're now just over a year away from Episode 9.
Yeah, which is weird, because when you brought up Last Jedi, it's hard to believe that that has been less than a year in existence.
I know. We've aged in dog years since that movie came out.
Yeah, it's one of those things. And people bring this up a lot. I've seen this in memes and whatnot, but that Black Panther came out this year. It's one of those things where you're like, wow, it kind of feels like it's always been there.
Yeah. Jeez. You know? Yeah. So I don't know what's going on with movie time lately.
I don't know. But with Episode 9, as much as I would love to have watched it this December, I got to be honest, it's kind of nice to have a little lead up time to get excited again about, you know, a new Star Wars thing. But, you know, I think Star Wars 9 has a lot riding on it, because this is going to be the end to this trilogy, and there's a lot of ways that it could go where it's at right now. So there's a lot of things people are wondering about, but I think the thing people are most wondering about is how it's going to handle the character of Princess Leia, because sadly we lost Carrie Fisher in 2016, and she was, you know, Princess Leia was alive at the end of the last film. So how do you bring her character to a satisfying conclusion when you don't have the actress? And from what we've been told, they've been scouring all footage that has been shot for the past two movies to figure out how they can naturally weave it in. And as you can imagine, it's going to be handled very, you know, with sensitivity and, you know, hopefully some grace. But we're getting a little bit of affirmation from the actors involved, including Oscar Isaac, who said that it deals with the amazing character that Carrie created in a really beautiful way. And I don't know. It's nice to get a little bit of affirmation from the people involved.
I think, he has an additional quote. He says, it's a strange thing to be on the set and to be speaking of Leia and having Carrie not be around. There's definitely some pain in that.
And you got to imagine, too, that they're probably speaking, I mean, you know, it sounds horrible, but probably to like a tennis ball. And that's supposed to be this person that there's probably so much emotion with them personally, you know, when they should be interacting with this person that they cared very much about. But then they also got to have the weight of whatever's going on in the story. And that person there isn't there. They're not talking to that person.
Yeah.
So that must be a really emotionally confusing and sort of sad thing to deal with.
Yeah, I do think, you know, he goes on in the interview just talking about the making of the film, which is, you know, in production right now. He says, it's been really fun being back with JJ, with all of us working in a really close way. I just feel like there's an element of almost senioritis, you know, since everything just feels way looser and people aren't taking it quite as seriously, but still just having a lot of fun. I think that energy is going to translate to a really great movie.
I think that sounds great. I think I can't remember if it was him or someone else in a quote maybe a month ago, I think I heard him say the same thing, where he was saying it just feels looser. I think with the first one, everyone was so worried, you know, when it was the one that was going to start it all. There was just so much writing on it, and everything was going to be ultra scrutinized. And I think at this point, they're like, let's just do the thing. Let's do the thing we want to do and have a good time doing it.
I mean, yes. And the thing is, there's all this, like, you know, I saw it, I think it was in Hollywood Reporter or Variety, it's like, oh, Lucas needs episode 9 to course correct the franchise. And it's like, well, I don't think there's anything to course correct necessarily. I mean, you know, it's going to do well. And, you know, there's like this narrative out there that Star Wars is in, you know, descent. And I don't know that that's really borne out by anything. I mean, I don't know if you saw this, that the Blu-rays sales for Solo have been very, very good.
Yeah, yeah. I think course correct isn't the right word. I feel like it's inevitably, no one knew what this was going to be like to push this universe, you know, continue pushing it with stories, not knowing when they're going to end.
Yeah.
So it's been an experiment. You know, and I think people reacted, there's been highs and lows.
Yes.
And so I think it's more like you've got to figure out what works and what doesn't. And I think with Solo, they realized like maybe, you know, there can be too much too soon. So, I mean, course correct, I don't know. I guess, no, I still don't think course correct's the right word. I think it's more like they're just feeling it out.
Yeah.
You know, and then you figure out what people are looking for. And the Solo, I don't mean Han Solo, but the, what am I trying to say? The adjacent adventures of other Star Wars characters needs to be looked at, you know, in certain ways. And yeah, they're figuring it out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I will say this. I do kind of wish that we were currently talking about Solo as, oh, it's coming out in a few weeks, you know.
yeah I'm one of those people. I mean, look, I obviously, it's nice to have anticipation for some things, but yeah, if there was a new Solo movie coming out this Christmas, obviously I'd be excited about it. So
that's yeah. And I you'll never convince me that that they wouldn't have been better off releasing that movie in December rather than,
no, absolutely,
you know. But with that said, we do have another franchise that you know, is continuing on with seemingly no end in sight, and latest release is out right now. So why don't we take a little break and we'll talk about Creed 2. And we're back. And hey, Creed 2 is out, and it's off to a fast start already. It's looking like it's already, we're recording this Wednesday morning, so really it's only been out in theaters for, you know, just
an evening.
Basically one evening, but it's already on pace to make something like $55 million over the five-day weekend.
Oh, that's great.
Which is impressive. So it'll come in second to Wreck-It Ralph 2.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So, not a bad thing. This is, in terms of the Rocky franchise, you've got Thanksgiving releases. You've got the original Rocky, you've got Rocky 4, Rocky 5, Creed, and now Creed 2. So, Thanksgiving has been a plentiful period for this franchise, which just keeps going and going, Brian.
I know, but you know, it's funny, and we talked about this during the commentary, with the Creed, I mean, I was going to call it the Creed series, but I mean, it is the Creed series, but they're also part of the Rocky series. They just really found this natural way to extend the life of this universe, but refocus to a different character, but still beautifully include Rocky without him impeding on the new main character. I mean, it's truly one of those things that could have very easily not worked. And with Creed, which came out, 2015, I think?
Yep.
I think we both agree that it worked beautifully.
Yeah, certainly for me, Creed, the first one, was one of my favorite movies of that year.
Yeah.
It was like lightning in a bottle.
Yes.
And so definitely, as soon as it did the kind of business that it did, a sequel was inevitable. And the sequel was almost more fraught than the first one.
Mm.
Partly because, obviously, anytime you do a sequel, it's a little bit risky. But once they announced the premise of the sequel, which, so we've got the son of Apollo Creed, who's challenged to a boxing match by the son of Ivan Drago.
Mm-hmm.
And I said this in my review, it reminded me of this cartoon show when I was a kid called Popeye and Son, where right. Where Popeye and Bluto, you know, they get married separately, to separate people they get married, and they have kids. Mm-hmm. And then their kids grow up to become enemies with each other. And I'm like, is that what we're doing with Rocky? We're doing Popeye and Son?
Right. Yeah.
This is not Popeye and Son.
No.
I think, well, okay, I mean, let's do our non-spoiler reactions. You've seen it, I've seen it. and then we can get into some spoilers. My personal history here, I mean, if you're a listener to the show, you already know this. Certainly, if you listen to the Rocky IV commentary, you know I love the Rocky movies. It's just been since I was a little kid. I was like 4 years old, 3 years old, and I saw Rocky II on VHS, mm-hmm. and ever since then, I've just loved the movies. But I plug into this universe in, I think, probably a different way than you do, Brian.
Yeah.
You're not a fan, but you're not like a fanatical fan.
Yeah.
That's fair, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you had the experience of just mainlining the first four Rockies on your way into this one.
Mm-hmm.
So how did this play for you?
Well, you set me up well for that because, yeah, I was going to say, I mean, I'm coming off of, mainlining this series this week. So this is completely in my consciousness right now. And I loved it. Honestly, it's funny too, because the friend of mine that I saw it with when it was over, I was like, man, that was great. And he was like, yeah, I enjoyed it. And then he had a couple quibbles and thought a few things about the third act. I was like, yeah, I guess so. I don't know. I'm like, but I actually cheered, you know, during the ending. And so, I mean, I was completely hooked into this thing.
To that point, the crowd I was watching it, first of all, one thing I have to say, I watched it in downtown San Francisco. It was a press screening the day before. And it was one of the most diverse crowds I've ever seen. I mean, you had people of every ethnic persuasion there. And I just thought that I can't remember the last time I saw a movie that was just it was appealing to people just so across the spectrum, which I thought was really cool.
I had the exact same experience, actually.
Oh, okay.
It was noticeable. Yeah, and it was really cool. And everybody was having the reaction I did, where every time someone, let's face it, the person we're rooting for, Adonis got punched, we were all like, ugh. And then everybody was cheering when he would, land a solid punch on Drago.
Cheering like it was a real boxing match?
Not to that degree.
Because I did. That was our crowd.
Oh, wow. Yeah, but no, it was palpable for sure.
It was, yeah, I mean, as a piece of movie engineering, like specifically designed to get like maximum crowd engagement, I think this movie it works flawlessly on that level.
Yeah, and also, I mean, this isn't even talking about the story, but just what the movie is capable of pulling out of you. I mean, during one of the training montages, which I'll get more into specifics after spoilers, but during one of the training montages, when it ended, I was ready to get up and run. It just really, whatever this movie was trying to do to me, it did.
There you
and
go.
Between the competition part of the film, of course, but also the story. I really cared about what was happening in this story. And I say that completely aware, though, that I am in this universe. My brain is in this universe this week. So I think I was delighted in a way that maybe some people might not be as much going in. I'm sure the movie does a great job of pulling everybody into what it wants.
Yeah.
But I was especially, in tune with everything that was going on. And so it just felt even more satisfying for me, I think.
I think what you're saying is exactly right. I think, and this is something I said in my review as well, that I think just the history and the mythology of the Rocky movies is one of the movie's biggest assets.
Yes. Yes.
Because it's really able to lean into sort of its own internal iconography, And my own story here is, I watched all seven previous movies in the lead up to this, and I watched them with my kids, and I took my oldest with me. I was telling you this yesterday, Brian, that I went and watched Rocky Balboa. It was my second viewing, but I watched it the day before my wife went into labor with him.
Yeah.
And here I am now, and he's almost 12, and we're watching another Rocky movie,
Yeah.
And he's like fully into it, and it was great because he's about the age I was when I was watching these movies, the original
That's
movies.
Amazing.
Yeah. And he's like, I think this is going to happen. And like at some point in the movie, he's like, I think this is going to, it's going to be just like in the second one or what, And and he's engaging on that level. So that made it really special for me. But, I think that I really liked it. I found myself really plugged in. And like you said, I've seen reviews sort of they're generally positive, but they're not as sort of rapturous as they were for the first one. And I would agree. I think the first movie is a better movie.
Sure. Yeah.
I think this is a better. This is not better, but this is a very good franchise extender. But I don't think it's revelatory like that first movie was.
Yeah, and I think that's almost inevitable because even with like superhero films, I mean, the origin story is almost always the most interesting, complex, challenging story to tell.
Yeah.
So then, when you already know who this person is and you have to have him do the thing again. It's really difficult to make that seem, you know, necessary or revelatory, or, you know, we've already sort of been through all the revelations with this
person. I agree with that. And I think the inherent problem with any story like this is the same problem. Basically, Creed 2 has the same problem that the various other Rocky sequels had, which is trying to contrive a reason for our man to get in the ring.
Yes.
And, you know, get demolished.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to create a logical reason to do that, and I think this movie tackles it better than I would have expected.
I totally agree with that. And I don't know how that would play to someone who hadn't seen Rocky IV.
Yes.
But with Rocky IV in my head, I totally understood what he was going through.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know that it was it becomes difficult too, you know, when these people have families. And they could get really, really hurt in the ring. I mean, there's part of you that's like, well, then don't get your, you know,
right.
get mopped up and possible brain damage in a ring because it's just a sport and who cares?
Yes.
On the other hand, if a movie does a good enough job, you just want to see the underdog do the thing. And for me, this movie made me care about the guy doing the thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a thumbs up from me. It's a thumbs up from you.
Yeah.
We want to get into some spoilers?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Spoilers.
So, Brian, the thought that I had watching this is I was sort of like, to some extent, I was stepping outside myself looking at what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it struck me that unlike The Last Jedi, which is all about, you know what we're doing? We're breaking the formula.
Yeah.
You're expecting this, we're going to do this. I thought what this movie was doing was like, you're expecting this? Yeah, basically that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is not a question of better or worse. I was like, there is absolutely value in acknowledging and embracing the formula that's been such a steady hand for so many years.
Yeah, but I think they did it well because it didn't feel like, oh, okay. Here comes this.
Right.
Here comes that. Like, I mean, when we're in spoilers now. I mean, when the fight is disqualified. Drago's son is disqualified in the middle, and then Creed has to decide if he's going to fight him again to actually, you know, keep his world heavyweight belt or whatever. You know what's going to happen.
Yes.
All I was going to say is, like, I still got pumped up by the training montage, and I still cared when he stepped into the ring, and I still really wanted him to win. And you know, it's so I feel like, yeah, you know what's going to happen, but at the same time, when you can make me squirm and sit on the edge of my seat as that's happening, like, you won.
Yeah, right. I agree. And like, just to give some perspective from my end, you know, like, as that first fight is happening, which is about halfway through the movie, give or take.
Yeah.
And you know, Adonis is getting in the ring. My kid, he whispers in my ear, I think he's going to lose this fight. You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, he knows that because he knows the formula.
Yeah.
Right? And I think what this one does, and Ryan Coogler did not write this, did not direct it. He is producer, but he wasn't super involved. It's directed by Stephen Caple, who did a great job, by the way. I've never
seen
him, but he did really well. And Sylvester Stallone co-wrote the script. I think what they essentially did was say, okay, what is the quote-unquote Rocky formula, and how do we line this up with that and sort of color outside the lines where needed, but make sure not to go too far outside the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's value in that. You know, I don't know about you, but as I watched it, I was like, well, what they've basically done in this movie is they did their Rocky 2, 3, and 4 in one movie.
Yes,
right?
Yeah.
Because it has elements of all three.
You're absolutely, that's great. Yeah, that's totally right.
And you know, another thought I had, honestly, was the movie ends at such a clean place. I'm like, I don't even need another Creed movie.
I thought about that, too. I don't know where you go from here.
Yeah. Like, I don't know where you go that doesn't start breaking the boundaries that you're sort of straining against.
Yeah, I wouldn't want them to have forced sequels they don't need, but if they were to do a trilogy, this feels like this would have been the perfect third one.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think here's what struck me. I thought that I was surprised, actually, how in sort of how drawn in I was by the Drago story.
Me too.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that and this is something I think you and I had talked about before. Where I was like, who is Ivan Drago this many years later? Like, where is he? And I the idea that he's just this broken man and he had this glory and it was taken away. And so he sees his son as just the vehicle to get his glory back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I love the way Victor Drago, by the way, played by Florian Munto. I love how, at least to me, I had this moment where Ivan Drago has this realization at the end that felt very poignant and sad and yet cathartic in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Where he, I mean, basically Adonis has his second wind and he's just beaten the hell out of Victor Drago, and mm-hmm. Ivan is the one who throws in the towel.
Mm-hmm.
And it was this, I don't know, it was this very poignant moment where he realized, like, this, I'm doing this to my son.
Mm-hmm.
I've done this to him.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We were talking about during our Rocky IV commentary that, I think, I forget how you said it, but you're like, I love this big, dumb, stupid movie.
Yes.
You know, and it's amazing because that movie is big and dumb and stupid, but we do love it. But they managed to make this like dignified sequel,
right,
to this like kind of silly movie. And it almost becomes even more apparent when you look back and think, like, I don't even remember who Ivan was. He's just like an image to me.
Yes.
He's like a Terminator, you know, yeah. And he doesn't feel like a human being. And in this one, when he's first, not the first scene, but when he shows up in Rocky's restaurant.
Yes.
Which is
like one of the best scenes in the movie.
One of the best scenes in the movie. And I felt scared.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like Darth Vader walking into your house.
Right.
And I was like, ooh, like, this makes me really uncomfortable. And yeah. And just them being in the same room just made me feel awkward and weird. And that came from me knowing the first movie. But then they don't make them speak in these sort of corny, you know, lines to each other. They talk like real men.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, all the way then through the ending. And then seeing what he lost. I mean, gosh, when they brought back Brigitte Nielsen.
That was unexpected.
That was unexpected. My theater gasped.
Really?
When she walked in, yeah. And me and my friend Chad saw it together. We were like, whoa. Like, it just, there was like a weight to it, you know? And then you realize that, you know, she was just, they're all props, really, in four. And in this one, you know, you realize like she left him because of his loss and the hurt. And that's, you know, Victor's mother and the hurt
and,
that he
and
feels.
And both of them are carrying this wound because she left. And I mean, you know, I think it's visualized so beautifully where Victor glances over and where she was sitting. She's just gotten up and left because she sees the fight. Like, she doesn't even wait to see the fight finish.
I was just going to say, like, they thought they were going to get her back. And then at the end, during the fight, oh, it's really well done. And you feel so, that's the thing. I want to hate the Dragos. I'm like, kill him.
Yes.
Like, you know, but then I'm like, oh, geez. I even thought, like, what are you doing, movie? Like, you're making me care about this guy.
I know.
And then, yeah, and then you see Ivan looks back and she's not there. And then what I really loved was you knew how much was riding on this for Ivan. And then when he throws in the towel and there's a little part of me that felt kind of bad for that family. But then I love at the end.
Yes, yes.
When they're running together.
Yes.
They're going to train again and they're running together as father and son. I was like, unreal.
Totally.
I can't believe the movie did this.
Right. I had that exact thought. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you never would have imagined this is the sequel we were going to get to Rocky IV.
Yeah. And it's what I like is that essentially they looked at in constructing this, they're like, okay, well, what is it about Rocky IV that is really the beating heart of the story? And it's the character drama. It's completely separate from the goofy Cold War stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in a weird way, what this movie does is it zeroes in on that. And, you know, I mean, obviously everything that happened in Rocky IV is what allowed the Creed series to happen. So that helps. But they made like a serious sequel to this glorified cartoon that, mm-hmm. that retroactively adds weight to that earlier movie.
Yes. Yeah. You know?
It's hard to pull off.
Well, yeah, and it's funny because I actually have a few other things I want to talk about, and I don't know which to go to do next. But I enjoy the story, like Adonis's story.
Yes.
Too. You know what I mean? I feel like this movie, like I had mentioned earlier with Creed, I think it beautifully weaves Rocky into the story enough to satisfy people who love Rocky. But this is Adonis's story. And I really got swept up in the baby thing of it too, and they, you know, the whole where they're wondering if she'll have hearing, and and even the scene, you know, where he's left with the baby and it's crying and he can't get it to stop, and when he goes to the gym with her and then starts punching that bag, and I don't know, I just feel like I none of that felt like let's get to the fight. Whereas, oh, we talked about that during Rocky IV, where it felt like story, whatever, get to the fight.
Yeah, right.
Get to a montage. Get to a whatever.
Right.
And I cared about all of it. And in the same sentence, I had to bring this up. I wrote this down as soon as I walked out because I didn't want to forget. Because we were talking about in Rocky IV how much we love Rocky's grassroots training montage where he's lifting wood and whatever. And then when he brings Adonis out to like the desert, you know, and he's just got this other grassroots montage of training for Adonis again, I was like, this is exactly what I want.
Yeah.
Like, you know, taking like a sledgehammer and just hitting the ground. You know, my friend, you know, he got up to go use the restroom during that moment, and the music is just unreal. Like, the Rocky theme might be the most inspirational score ever written. And so then that just starts blasting, the horns of that start blasting while he's running. And remember he's running behind the car and he falls on his face, and Rocky's driving the car and he's looking at him in the rearview mirror. He's like, get up. And then, you know, Creed does, and he pulls himself up. I think I actually did clap involuntarily during that moment. And when it ended, my friend came back and I was like, I am so pumped up. Like, he's like, what I miss? I'm like, I want to run a marathon.
You missed everything.
Yeah. So it's just funny. Like, this movie, like, the montages were firing on all cylinders. Like, the story was firing on cylinders. It made me care. I don't know. I know I sound really high on this, but it just played for me.
No, I think that it's, again, if you take like a high level view, you see the plot mechanics. You say, we need there to be some kind of a break between Adonis and Rocky.
Yes.
We need, you know, and we need Adonis to be humbled. We need, you know the pieces here, because it's very Rocky III in its construction.
Yes.
It's very Rocky. I would say it's like it's built on a chassis of Rocky III with parts from Rocky IV and parts of Rocky II sort of sewn on, like armor.
Totally.
Right. Because structurally it's very much the, you know, just like with Rocky. Oh, I can do this. I can do the fight. His trainer's like, don't do it. It's a bad idea. And then he gets his ass kicked. And then he needs to find a new way to come back. I mean, it's Rocky IV. It's Rocky III, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think what's interesting to me is by virtue of the fact that we have this pre-existing, you know, attachment to Rocky, we're able to see more from his point of view, and we feel bad for him when Adonis, like, kind of shuts him out. You know, after the first fight, when Rocky comes to see him, and he's like, just get out of here, you know, and you're like, come on, dude, that's Rocky, don't do that.
Yeah.
Right? But I think, you know, for me, what my heart warmed at that moment when Rocky comes, when, first of all, when Marianne Creed, his mother, sends Rocky the letter, she just says, he still needs you.
Mm-hmm.
And so Rocky goes to California, and then they reconcile. And I was like, ugh. Like, you know it's going to happen, but it's nice, you know?
Yeah, every time Creed called Rocky uncle.
Yes.
It just, my heart, I was just like, ugh.
Right?
Just because I care about them so much.
You know, I do feel like the character business that they give Rocky about his son and not calling his son, that to me felt the most contrived.
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. I saw that in your review, and I'd kind of forgotten about it. And I mean that actually as a statement about that part of the story. I think you're totally right. In the middle, when he's like, I just haven't called my son. I can't call my son. I was like, are they home aloning us?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's like old man Marley.
Yeah, right.
Like, just like, you know, what if he doesn't want to talk to me? And then, but I remember in Home Alone, the older I get, the more I cry at that moment, sure. Actually.
I think with my problem with this is, like, guys, like, we've done this in two movies already where Rocky, like, his son won't talk to him and then they reconcile. It's like, that's what we'd figured that out in the sixth one, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm agreeing with you. I think in Home Alone it works, but in this one with a character that we know so well, yeah, it felt a little undercooked. And we don't even know why they're
that's
at odds,
the thing.
Right?
Like, and I'll tell you, this is already something that Stallone had in his toolbox because he did the exact same thing in the last Rambo movie. Because in the whole movie, Julie Benz is like, you know, like, why don't you go home? Like, don't you have anybody there? He's like, my father. Well, why don't you? Well, I haven't talked to him in a long time. And then at the very, very end of the movie, he returns to his, like, farm where his father lives. We never see the resolution of that, but it's the same exact beat.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So definitely it's Stallone, like, repeating himself a little bit.
Yeah.
I thought it was a nice moment when we see Milo Ventimiglia, and I know people in my audience started applauding when they saw him.
Yeah, same. There's a big response in my audience to him, and I didn't know if it was... I had to assume it's because they like him, and they were surprised to see him.
It's because of This Is Us, I'm sure, right?
Well, I thought it was almost like a good cheat, because I think when people who are fans of that show see him, yes. They just have a response to start crying.
Yeah, because he's like the greatest father in history on that show.
right. So it's like it's like a good little trick.
And I like that they maintained continuity because, you know, Rocky Jr. has been played by a different actor like every single time.
Mm.
So I'm glad that they actually brought one back. You know, I think they were able to lean into the continuity of it. But to me, I mean, that's a very small quibble.
Yeah.
But definitely, that was a little bit to me that stuck out because it felt like contrived drama.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one.
You know?
Something else I wanted to bring up though that I thought was really good drama was it'd be easy to watch Creed lose that fight and be angry in the middle.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I guess he didn't lose, but the disqualification, whatever,
yeah. That
happened, and just see him like angry, and then not want to talk to Rocky, and you know, figure things out. But what I really appreciated was the movie dwelled on the pain and trauma that comes from such a violent event.
Yeah,
right. Like when he's in the hospital, and he looks awful.
Yeah.
And I thought about that. You know, it's like you watch a boxing match on TV and the loser, you're like, oh, okay, yeah, that guy, oh, hey, the guy won. And you move on and you're like, I wonder if they're going to be a rematch. And you just move on with your life. But like, these people had the hell beat out of them.
Yeah. And to your point, Brian, I think the fact that, you know, the image from the previous films is always you take the beating, but you're stoic.
Yes.
And this movie, I mean, you see his pain while he's fighting. You see him screaming when
yes. He's
punched in the ribs and his ribs are breaking. I certainly felt the visceral impact of the hits far more in this movie than in any other point in this series.
Oh, absolutely. Every time they did that rib thing, I was like, ugh.
Right?
Yeah. And one of the images, if I were to think of like three or four images from this movie that I remember, one of them is Michael B. Jordan in that hospital bed with tears in his eyes.
Yeah.
And it was just so hard to watch, but I appreciated spending that time seeing what happens to someone after an event like that. And, you know, obviously there's other emotional things going on when he thinks of his father and how much he hates this, you know, family that he just was up against. But him talking to Rocky and, you know, you want him to go like, thanks for showing up, Rock, but that's just not where he's at. And I don't know, I thought that was really well done and powerful and interesting to see, and I don't think it's something we see a lot.
I think, you know, carrying the character's arc forward, Adonis's arc, I think we see how he still hasn't put his baggage to rest, right? He's still that kid who was abandoned when he was young and is dealing with all this rage, right? And so
yeah. Even,
like, he can't, his he reflexively lashes out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what makes the relationship with Rocky so poignant, is that, like, he can't stop himself from being angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's hard. I mean, I think that you know, certainly when I look at where Rocky is in this film, you know, to some extent, it's like the things that he tells Adonis and stuff. It's just, it's from a life that's been lived, right? And mm-hmm. and you know, that's where wisdom sometimes comes from. It's just from being around long enough to know what's important and what's not. You know.
Yeah.
And so and this is one of those things where you know, when he's telling him, look, you don't need this fight. It's not that important, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because he's got years of experience that says what priorities really are, you know?
Yeah.
But that's stuff that you can only learn with experience.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I you know, dealing with my own kids all the time, you know, I tell my wife sometimes, I'm like, look, honestly, they got to make their own mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, we can sit here and sort of shake our finger at them, but honestly, that's how they're going to learn.
Right.
And we can be there for them. We can make sure that they have somebody to turn to. But, you know, that's just, if we view Adonis as Rocky's surrogate son, I mean, that's the process of parenting, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, I mean, hey, the 8th movie in a Rocky series made us think about these things.
Yeah, you
so
know,
that's really says something.
It's, you know, these movies, you know, like I said, they're just really, really special to me. And it's kind of amazing that, you know, here we are 40 plus years later, and there's still something about this world that has value in it that's worth revisiting.
Yeah, and I think along with that, it's also managed to feel fresh with this new character. So, like, people could have not seen those previous 5 or 6 films and just see Creed in this and enjoy whatever they're watching, right? But yeah. Then also for people like us, and I can say that now because I've seen all of them, it was very satisfying when Rocky meets his grandson and hands him his bouncy ball.
Yes.
Because that's how we're, like, basically introduced to Rocky in the first one. Is he's this, like, guy walking around the streets of Philadelphia bouncing this ball.
Yeah.
So there's something kind of beautiful about that.
Well, and I think that, I mean, certainly at the end of the movie, right? So Adonis is now the champion, the undisputed champion, and Rocky doesn't come into the ring with him. He says, it's your time, right?
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, I was like, what is being said there? I mean, obviously it's a passing of the torch, but is Stallone saying I'm done now?
Yeah. I was wondering that too, what the filmmaker statement was.
Right. Cause it's a beautiful, if you look at the shot, we see it. It's, I mean, it's like something you'd put on the poster. It's just, you see the ring and there's Rocky sitting outside the ring wearing, like, you know, the Creed, jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just framed in this very, it's framed in a kind of an iconic way that's almost saying goodbye to the character.
Yeah, wearing his old hat.
Yes.
As well. I think he puts the hat on, doesn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right? So I was wondering about that. I was like, because the truth is, I would rather a Creed movie that does not have Rocky in it than have a Creed movie where Rocky dies in it.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
You know what I mean?
I don't know that I want to spend time on that.
I told you this in our Rocky IV commentary. My heart's not ready to watch Rocky Balboa die in front of my damn eyes.
I agree with that.
You know?
Yeah.
So if you're to carry the series forward and you just don't have Rocky in it, I would almost prefer that.
Yeah. Agreed. And we should mention Tessa Thompson.
Oh,
and Felissa Rashad, because
both great in this, yeah.
Yeah, like this movie, if to move forward strictly with Creed's universe, I mean, it's populated with very interesting people. I mean, Tessa Thompson plays Bianca, who becomes his wife. I love their interplay.
Yes.
Like, you know, I mean, she's
I love that
concerned.
She's his Adrian.
Yeah, exactly. And she's an interesting character on her own, and she... it's such a delicate balance, right? Where you don't want to have this, like, nagging wife character that's always trying to stand in the hero's way from doing the thing the audience wants.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like her opposition feels warranted and understandable, but she also supports and understands what he needs. And, you know, it's not always all about him. Like, you know, he has to be there for his family and what she's going through. I mean, obviously with the pregnancy and then the baby, you know, possibly not being able to hear, the something that was passed down from her and that she's dealing with that. And I just felt like it's very, the world's very rich.
Yes.
That they've painted for all this. And I would be interested. I've said this about other things, but the sign of a good TV show is whenever they choose to focus on a character and you're never bored. Right. Yeah. Sometimes you do a show and they focus on some character. You're like, oh, okay, we're going to be spending like 2 minutes with this person, but I want to get back to that person. Like in this movie, I was never bored, whatever scene we were in. And I think that is the sign of a rich universe.
But Brian, I'll tell you, I mean, certainly you and I both had probably similar reactions to this, but it's not universal. I mean, you mentioned the person you went to see it with had some issues. I mean, what were some of the problems that they brought up?
You know, the only thing they mentioned, I haven't had a lot of time to talk about it, but I think he said he was hoping to wring more drama out of the last fight, almost to the point of Creed's mother, you know, trying to ask Rocky to possibly throw in the towel at some point and him having to decide again.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah, I see that. But I think I don't know. I just... That wasn't where my head was at during that fight, I guess.
I mean, they do allude to Rocky having to make that choice, right?
Yes.
Which I appreciate. But I like the fact that, to me, it was like, again, it's one of those things where you say, well, within the formula, how do you stray? And I think things like having the first fight end in a disqualification, that's like you're just slightly coloring outside the lines, but it's still the formula.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fight ends not with a knockout. This is like the first time ever in the entire series where it ends with somebody ending the fight.
Yes.
They've never done that.
Right.
And again, going back to what I was saying earlier, I just love that they were able to wring pathos out of that. Again, to make you feel sympathy for these two muscle-bound behemoths who have been just the big bads for you know, decades. Like you said, the Darth Vader comparison is very apt, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think it perfectly, it's like this perfect epilogue to Rocky IV.
Yeah, and who would have ever thought that, yeah, Ivan Drago would become this father? Like, it makes sense that he would be like, I will use my son as this instrument for our family to, like, you know, reclaim the honor of our family. And at the end, yeah, he chooses to save his son. And then at the end, for the first time, he's, like, with his son. Like, yeah. Running with his son and side by side with his son. It's like, what? This is the guy from Rocky IV?
That's right.
Like, yeah, it's I don't know.
I mean, Brian, I got to tell you, I had that moment because I watched Rocky IV the first time in 1988.
Mm.
It was the first time I saw it. My friend Atif Qureshi, who I'm still friends with, lent me a VHS tape. So Atif, if you're listening, thank you so much for first giving me the chance to see this movie. But 30 years later, I was realizing, I mean, the movie came out 33 years ago, but I happened to see it 30 years ago. And then I'm, you know, the movie starts and I'm like, that's Ivan Drago.
Yeah.
Like, we're back here 30 years later.
Yeah.
It's surreal. I mean, to me, I make that Star Wars connection. I've made it a few times, but I just think it's so apt with these sequels. Like, you have this legacy series that picks up on little bits and pieces of that iconography, but is just doing its own thing now.
Yeah, and I don't want to, like, repeat myself. I think I might have said this at the beginning, but, like, what a world we're living in where, you know, in terms of entertainment, where you can have this silly movie you liked as a kid, and you're like, you know what would be really cool? If they made a sequel to this, but, like, picture this. Like, it's really good, because what if they actually made Drago kind of this character, and you cared, and it's Apollo's son, and that movie exists.
Yeah.
And it's pretty damn good.
It's not fanfic.
Yeah.
Although I will say, if the third Creed movie involves the son of Clubber Lang, I'm throwing in the towel at that point.
Yes. Agreed.
I don't know what happens next with the Creed movies. I really don't. I think based on the box office, I think a third one seems inevitable.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I'm a little hesitant.
Me too. It's so clean now.
It is such a good ending that if this is the end of this universe as far as we see it, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm very curious. I'm very curious to see what happens next. Whatever happens, obviously Sylvester Stallone will be involved in some capacity because this is his universe.
Mm-hmm.
You have to imagine that he's pretty happy with Ryan Coogler for basically, like, giving him this, like, annuity that he didn't even think would be happening, you know?
Yeah, and I think for people who didn't listen to our commentary, you mentioned, I found this fascinating, that Coogler pitched this to Stallone. This is like pre-Fruitvale Station.
Yeah, Fruitvale.
Which is the movie that put him on the map, and I just love the gumption of that.
Well, two things, right? The gumption, you know, just the sheer, you know, stupid ignorance, not knowing any better. Mm-hmm. To just be like, hey, you know, because what is that? It's just you don't know enough to say, oh, there's no way. So you just take the chance.
Yeah.
But the fact that Stallone took the meeting and didn't laugh him out of the room.
Yep.
So, you know, and you end up with something that is really special. And I think, again, just based on the reaction to the crowd I saw it with, the Creed movies will be for this generation what the Rocky movies were for ours, yours and mine.
Yeah.
So agreed. I think that's a good place to leave it. What do you think?
Yeah.
Did we agree on Creed? We
agreed
on Creed. We should close out this episode by playing some Creed.
Yeah. Oh, let's not go crazy here.
Is there anything that you wanted to mention that we haven't brought up already?
No.
Well, perfect. Okay. Well, this is not a bad way to start our Thanksgiving weekend by being thankful that Creed 2 ended up being as good as it is.
Yeah.
And we'll be back in just a few short weeks. We got lots of new. Obviously, the Oscar contender type movies are coming out. Mm-hmm. And before long, Aquaman is going to be here. Aquaman pre-sales are huge.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, speaking of Dolph Lundgren, he's in that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, funny.
Dolph Lundgren is in. By the way, this movie, Tessa Thompson, Michael B. Jordan, and Sylvester Stallone are in the MCU, and then you've got Dolph Lundgren is over in the DCU. Felicia Rashad will be the tiebreaker to decide.
Yeah.
What universe she ends up in. But before too long, we will be talking about Aquaman as well as several other movies. In our next episode, I will be talking about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I'll be seeing a special screening of that, so I'm looking forward to discussing that as well. And, we're barreling towards the end of 2018. 2019 is just around the corner. We've got a bunch of great commentaries planned for next year because it's going to be a bumper crop of anniversaries.
Mm. Yeah, 89.
89, and also 84.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All right, because we got the Terminator and the Karate Kid.
Ooh. Oh.
Karate Kid would be a great... But oh, that's... I was going to mention... Come on, there was a lot of Cobra Kai in this, in Creed 2.
I didn't even think about that.
It was very Cobra Kai.
That's pretty funny, yeah.
Right? I was thinking about that yesterday.
Yeah, actually, I passed the actual physical location of the Cobra Kai dojo the other day for lunch, and it was just a little surreal.
The original Cobra Kai dojo.
The original, yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that continuing too.
Yeah.
Sorry, Charles Landy, our listener who does not like Cobra Kai.
Did he finish it?
I don't know. I don't know. Charles, did you finish it? Let us
Charles,
know.
Send it to me mentally right now. Because it was one of those things where I was ready to give up in the middle. Mm-hmm. And I stuck with it on your recommendation, and I thought it did come together to a satisfying conclusion.
I agree with that.
That was my final kind of.
No, Creed 2 had echoes of Cobra Kai. Certainly, if you look at Drago as Johnny.
Right. Coloring him is a little bit more of a human being.
Yes, you know, yeah. I think there's a lot there. So, like I said, lots to discuss in the next couple weeks. But we'll be back soon with another commentary track. Brian, I think I can announce it here.
Sure.
The new Robin Hood movie is in theaters right now, starring Taron Egerton and Jamie Foxx, and it's on track to make, I think, negative dollars. I think.
I think
what will be happening is people will be watching it and demanding their money back.
Yeah.
At least based on the reviews. I haven't watched it yet. I do plan to.
Oh, the reviews.
Based on the reviews, yeah, it's not great. And the box office is, it's going to open in like 76th place.
Interesting.
Although it's produced by Leonardo DiCaprio. Did you know that?
No.
Isn't that weird, right?
What is that about?
Anyway, but I am planning on seeing it. But more importantly, as it relates to this show, is we are celebrating, quote-unquote, the release of the new Robin Hood by looking back at the previous Robin Hood, or one of the previous Robin Hoods, the Robin Hood Prince of Thieves.
Yeah.
And as I said of Rocky IV, I say for Robin Hood Prince of Thieves, I love that effing stupid movie.
You know, it's been a really long time for me, so I will have to revisit this before we do that, but I remember loving it.
Well, then this should make for a fun conversation.
Yeah.
So listen for that soon, and listen for our next regular episode soon after that. And as we wrap things up, Brian, anything you want to let our listeners know about?
Well, I write for a show called Puppy Dog Pals, which airs on Disney Junior, and we have new episodes, which I have heard is much to the relief of parents. So they're not having to watch the same episodes over and over and over again. I think little kids seem to like it, and I hear older kids and even college kids seem to like it. So there's something to be said about the adventures of puppy dogs that appeals to everyone.
There
so
you go.
I
can't go wrong I with think, that.
Yeah, it's fun. Check it out.
As for me, you can find me at my website, zakiscorner.com. That's Z-A-K-I-S corner. That's also my Twitter. That's also my Instagram. So please give me a follow or give me whatever you feel like giving. That's cool. Also, give us, the Movie Film Podcast, your thoughts. You can go to our website, moviefilmpodcast.com, or email us, moviefilmpodcast@gmail.com. You can also hit like on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviefilmpodcast, and go to iTunes and leave a review. Leave a star rating. Every little bit helps. Our show is available at various podcasting platforms in addition to iTunes, Stitcher, and iHeartRadio, and so many more. Spotify. We're on Spotify now.
Wow.
So we are everywhere. It's very exciting. Thanks, everyone, for your continued support. Also, please, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, check out the latest episode of the Nostalgia Theater podcast. I want to put a plea out here, by the way, folks. Please check out the Nostalgia Theater show, because I feel like, the regular show does pretty well. I feel like the Nostalgia Theater show does a little less than this show. And there's some great content there that I'm pretty happy with. So, if you don't mind, I think you might enjoy it. It's the latest episode is our tribute to Stan Lee, but there's also a bunch of great stuff in the archives that are worth checking out.
I truly mean this. Like it really is one of my favorite podcasts, and it's one of those things that like hits upon those things that you're like, oh, I remember that. I would like to hear the story of that. And you've gotten some really fun, interesting guests. Stephen Weber was a great episode.
That's
recently.
That's like one of my favorite experiences in my life.
Yeah, that, and also I really love the Patrick Duffy one. That one was a little surreal, and by the end, he calls you his friend, and it was just like a really fun, satisfying listen. And they're usually about like an hour long, maybe a little less even, and I highly recommend that podcast.
Well, there you go. And Brian has no, it's not like he knows me or anything, so.
I know. Obviously, you're like my bud, but like I could have just been like, yeah, you guys check it out. It's good. But like I'm giving it my honest personal recommendation.
I sincerely appreciate that. That means a lot to me, and I'm very proud of the content that we've put out. So I hope you will check that out, and I hope you'll be back. This has been Movie Film 160. My gosh, 160 episodes. Here's to 160 more and many more after that. On behalf of my partner Brian Hall, my name is Zaki Hassan, and we will catch you next time.
Welcome, friends. It's the Movie Podcast, enjoy the show. Zaki and Brian are talking about movies. Movie Film Podcast on the radio.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.